Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Katie's American Indian Arts, Madison Jazz Society, and Ministry Healthcare. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from The Hostel Shop in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, committed to helping people rediscover the joy of cycling with recumbent trikes and a comfortable, efficient, and easy riding experience. More at hostelshop.com.
Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Today on Route 51, we are broadcasting live from the campus of UW-Stevens Point for the 2014 Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention, an event which is taking place at the nearby Holiday Inn Hotel and Convention Center. Each year, the convention brings together hundreds of scientists, managers, consultants, teachers, lakefront homeowners, and business leaders. They're all concerned about the future of our freshwater resources. Among this year's events, a panel discussion that I'll be moderating tomorrow with a research scientist involved in a 30-year experiment on the effects of acid rain on our Northwoods lakes. But there are many threats to Wisconsin's thousands of lakes. Algae blooms and choking weed growth caused by phosphorus runoff, aquatic invasive species that upset the delicate environmental balance, and overdevelopment of our lake shores. This convention brings together all three legs of the three-legged stool of this lakes partnership: the Department of Natural Resources, University of Wisconsin Extension, and also the nonprofit Wisconsin Lakes Organization. Later in the show, we'll be hearing from Mary Nipper. She's the board president of Wisconsin Lakes, and Jane Doffenbach, the president of Aquarius Systems, which builds floating lake management equipment, builds it right here in Wisconsin. But now we welcome Carol Shaw, the section chief for Lakes and Rivers of the Bureau of Water Quality of the DNR, and Amy Kowalski, UW Extension Lakes Communications Specialist. We also welcome you. We invite you to join the conversation. The phone number is 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a question on our Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. Carol and Amy, let's start by talking about the convention. When did it get its start? And either one of you can just jump in.
Go ahead, Carol.
Well, this is the 36th year of the convention. It actually started here on campus. The first one, I believe, was held in Alumni Hall. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how many people came, but it was small enough to fit into that room.
Well, how's it grown over those 36 years?
Well, this year I think we have over 600 planned attendance.
Yep, we have close to 600 this year. At some time, there was close to 700 when we were here in Stevens Point, and we just came back to Stevens Point this year. We've been in Green Bay for 11 years. So.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, that's why it suddenly came on my radar as a reporter that's based in central Wisconsin.
Right.
So 600 people, how many of them are scientists, technical people? Just a rough breakdown. Half of them, three quarters?
I would say maybe a third.
Yeah, that's probably a good guess.
And how many of them are business people?
I'd say a smaller amount, maybe 10%.
About 10%, and just average citizens, people who want to learn more about our freshwater resources. Maybe they live on a lake, maybe they fish on a lake.
Right, that's most of our audience, I would say.
Why is this thing so important? Why is it important to get all these people together?
Well, from the department standpoint, you know, we have over 10,000 lakes in the state, and comparatively just a handful of staff that can manage those lakes. So we've built this partnership to help us be able to reach out to those lakes. We work with the people who live on lakes. There's 600 lake associations or more in the state. There are things called lake districts, or actually units of local government that are around lakes. And mm-hmm. There's over 200 of those. So we have this partnership with them and Extension to help bridge that gap. And they're really the ones doing the management and the taking care of our lakes. And we just are there to kind of help be on tap.
Now, on the webpage, it says that Saturday's agenda is geared toward folks who have never made it to the Lakes Partnership Convention. It includes a keynote speech by Dr. Tyrone Hayes. You may have seen a profile piece about him in the New Yorker magazine. He's a University of California researcher whose work focuses on frogs as a barometer of the health of our ecosystems, and his experiments led to the ban on the chemical atrazine.
Yes. Yes, we are really excited to have Tyrone come in, and it's kind of, the frogs for lakes are kind of like canary for a coal mine. So that's really how we've found a lot of things about, you know, what our lakes can tell us. So,
and atrazine did not do very good things for the frog population, from what I've read about it, and apparently wasn't doing good things for people either.
Right. Unfortunately, there is a link there.
And then tomorrow morning, Friday morning, I'm moderating a panel discussion with the scientists involved in a 30-year experiment on the effects of acid rain. That's an experiment that took place at Little Rock Lake, a horseshoe-shaped body of water north of Monaco. They actually divided that lake into two halves and then treated one half with the kind of acid that's been falling out of the sky in Canada and so on from the Ohio-based power plants, and left the other side alone, and that acid rain did not do good things to the biodiversity in Little Rock Lake.
Well, it did. It showed it did what they expected it to do, but what that experiment finally showed was that if we left it alone, and the lake would recover and the biota would come back. So that was really what we found there, was if we can control acid rain, our lakes will recover.
Well, Carol, basic research into our lakes and rivers, that's an important role for the DNR.
Sure is. We have a research unit that we work real closely with. A lot of research and development of all sorts of things like acid rain. After the acid rain, what we did in Little Rock Lake was we used that same division and we took all the wood and woody debris out of the lake on one side and studied the response, and what we found is the fish population crashed.
So when homeowners who live around a lake end up taking all of that debris and all of that unsightly dead wood out of the lake, what they're actually doing is destroying the fish population.
Correct.
And, you know, ostensibly also destroying the value of your home in the process, because without fish, lakefront property just isn't worth as much.
Yeah, the side with the wood in it had 2 to 3 times the fish production as the side that was removed.
Well, Carol, you've been with the Lakes Program of the DNR for 20 years. What do you think the greatest threats are to our lakes, besides the ones that we just mentioned?
Well, right now, non-point source pollution is our big challenge, particularly in the larger lakes with larger watersheds.
And where do you think we've made progress with this, and how much do we still need to do?
Well, over the years, we've made a lot of progress trying to do better with the land, do better agricultural practices, do better stormwater management practices. We have seen a lot of our lakes over 30 years, a slight increase in clarity. Some of our other lakes are still quite challenged. If they have large watersheds and a lot of agriculture, we still... We're kind of flatlining there.
Well, that's tough, though, isn't it? You know, in some cases, you're balancing out the economic interests of agriculture, big agriculture, farmers, and trying to convince them that what they're doing on their farm might affect the water quality in a body of water that's miles away from where they're at.
That's right.
We've got also a tremendous problem with algae blooms in some areas, the Lake Petenwell, Castle Rock flowage area, and then the Eau Claire flowage south of Mozanique. Tremendous fish kill because of a lack of oxygen.
Right, and that algae is driven by an element called phosphorus that's in the runoff. That's what comes out of soil and animal waste, and that when that gets in the water, the algae really responds, and so that's what causes the algae blooms. And those lakes you all named are very large lakes with large agricultural watersheds. There's also point sources that come from sewage treatment plants and paper mills. So it's
now, one thing that we have done, I'm going to talk to Mary about this a little bit later because she was one of the people pushing it, is take the phosphorus out of lawn fertilizer in Wisconsin. That happened 5 years ago. Has that made a difference on some of our lakes?
Well, I think it probably has, particularly the smaller lakes that are surrounded by lawns and maybe don't have the huge watersheds where the watershed is the lawn of the neighboring lakes. And certainly it's just important for the people to say, well, we're willing to do something to make a difference too. Walk the talk.
If you just joined us, I'm Glenn Moberg. We are broadcasting live from UW Stevens Point with Carol Shaw of the DNR and Amy Kowalski of UW Extension for the 2014 Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention going on at the Holiday Inn. Keynote speaker Tyrone Hayes on Saturday, and if you go to our Route 51 Facebook page, you will see the New Yorker piece that profiles him on that Facebook page if you'd like to know more about the guy who's going to be talking to us on Saturday. Amy, let's talk about UW Extension, how it's involving the public at large and playing a role in the health of our lakes.
Okay, well, we have several programs that kind of are pulled together with the Department of Natural Resources and Wisconsin Lakes. So we work as a partnership really on all of these programs, but one of the programs is Citizen Lake Monitoring Network. It used to be called Self-Help Network, and it's been going for 30 years, or almost 30 years. So this is basically volunteers who are going out and collecting data on these lakes.
Explain to me how that's done. You explained it to me in a phone conversation we had, and it's really pretty simple. It sounds like anybody can do it.
Yes, actually, well, one of the things that they collect is water clarity, and they use what's called a Secchi disc, and it's 8 inches in diameter, and it has four quadrants, two black and two white, so it's easy to see when it goes down in the water. Basically, I mean, there's a science to it, how you're supposed to do it, but you put it down in the water and you see how far you can put it down before you can't see it anymore. And that gives you your water clarity depth.
And how many people are doing those tests for you all across the state?
Well, this last year there were almost 900
wow.
people. And over the years, since 1986 when it started, there have been 4,000 people.
And,
so,
and those are just average citizens doing their part to protect our lake resources.
That's right. They think it's very important.
Well, what's been happening to the water clarity of our lakes? Carol, you seemed to indicate it was kind of a mixed bag.
Well, right. Just to add to the Citizen Lake Monitoring Network and the science intersection, what we've done recently is be able to satellite data to actually look into the lakes and see how clear they are. And then what we ask the volunteers to do is to go out when the satellite's going over, so that we can really kind of calibrate that satellite to what the volunteers are seeing, and then we can extend that to all the lakes in the state where we don't have volunteers or anybody collecting data. So in the past few years, we've been able to really look at all our lakes and build a trend back with that satellite data going back 20, 30 years. And we've seen overall a slight increase in clarity, but it is a mixed bag. I think the lakes that are seepage lakes that don't have large watersheds are doing pretty well. The lakes, again, the reservoirs, those are the challenging management.
Well, we're not dealing with a static situation here either. The climate is changing in Wisconsin. It's getting warmer, particularly warmer up north. How has climate change caused increased problems with water clarity and kind of complicated your task?
Well, with clarity, what we see with climate change is more intense storms, more rain in a shorter time, which causes more runoff. When we design best management practices, sometimes we design them for less volume, so they're being overwhelmed. We're also seeing in March and February more rain than snow, and so we get a lot more runoff when you don't have any ground cover, and that pulse of spring runoff is getting worse than it used to be.
And, more unfrozen ground in March and heavier and shorter duration. And then we've also got prolonged drought in some areas because of climate change. Terrible problems in central Wisconsin, not last year, but the year before. We had trout streams like the Little Plover River and lakes in Washera County just drying up completely.
And again, it's highly variable. Those lakes are higher in the landscape. They're really dependent on groundwater. They don't have large watersheds. So as the drought prolongs, the groundwater goes down in those areas. And the other thing that climate change is doing is that we have less ice cover in the winter, so there's more evaporation out of our lakes during the wintertime. Conversely, in some of the lower lakes, we've seen with more runoff a lot of flooding. So there are some lakes that are actually higher than they've been.
And, Carol, a lot of people who are listening are going to say, what are you talking about, less ice cover? You know, we've got we just came off of the worst winter in memory, maybe one of
right.
the worst in history. A lot of people are going to say, why are you talking about climate change? It's obviously not happening.
Well, it'll be a good year, certainly for the lakes. But if you look at those ice cover data over long periods of time, again, the trend line is shorter and shorter ice.
And there's also a difference between climate and weather,
right.
and particularly one season.
Certainly.
And if folks have an interest in this climate change and how it affects lakes, we have an entire stream at the convention tomorrow and Saturday that talks about climate change in lakes.
And again, citizen monitoring is something that UW Extension does, and we have a link on our Route 51 Facebook page, which will put you right in touch with UW Extension. If you're interested as an average citizen in protecting your lake or the lake that you fish in or the lake that you boat in, 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. We are talking about our clean water resources, the threats to our lakes, and the folks who are trying to do something about it. Maybe you're one of them. Let's talk about invasive species. There's another threat to our lakes, and Amy, you've got a program at UW Extension to address that as well.
Right. Actually, there are some Citizen Lake Monitoring Network volunteers that volunteer to find aquatic invasive species, but there's also a program called Clean Boats, Clean Waters that was actually started by three middle schoolers back in the day, and they won a contest, a national contest, that got them $25,000 as a grant to start this program. And now we basically, I don't know how many volunteers we have, but across the state, people are at boat landings having, you know, using a conversational approach to talk to boaters and make sure that they are aware of the laws and that they take animals and plants off of their equipment and their boat.
Are these people volunteers or you're paying them to monitor these boat docks?
Most of these people are volunteers. Some of them get paid through a grant, but most of them are volunteers.
That's got to be tough, you know, to come up with a bunch of guys who've been out on the boat all afternoon fishing, and they're tired and they're dragging their boat in and confronting them right there on the dock and telling them you better clean off the bottom of your boat to make sure that you don't spread these invasive species to other lakes.
Right. I think, though, what is nice about it is most of these folks who are out on the lakes, they care. They want to take those invasive species off their boat. They, you know, and most of them know what the laws are. So, and the folks that are at the landings aren't there to, you know, really monitor and say, okay, you need to do this. They're out there having a conversation, just, you know, helping out.
Well, let's talk about a couple of invasives. Purple loosestrife. We hear a lot about that. Very pretty plant. Why is it a problem?
Well, it likes to take over wetlands. It likes the shallow, mucky soils. And before you know it, that's the only plant that will be there. So we lose our diversity of plants.
Rusty crayfish decimated the fisheries of some of our prettiest northern lakes, Star Lake up north. A few years ago, I went camping with my son on Star Lake. We didn't catch any fish. And usually when you go out on a lake like that, you're looking for weed beds. You're looking for lily pads. And there aren't any. And it's because of the rusty crayfish.
Yeah, they like to go and cut the vegetation down, bring it down on the ground where they can feed on it. So they're actually a North American species that just has found its way north into our lakes.
How do you combat something like rusty crayfish? I know that at Star Lake they've got big what would you call them, cages that are attracting these crayfish, and you pull them up, and I pulled one up because I was fishing with a daredevil and the treble hook got caught in one of these cages, and man, I thought I had the worst snag in my life, and I pulled it up and they're like 30 of these little monsters looking at me and clicking and clacking their claws. You know, could you turn that, you know, the proverbial lemonade out of lemons, maybe have a crayfish festival and see.
Some people that think that's why they were stocked in the lakes, maybe inadvertently. People thought they would have a crayfish boil. But the traps that you're talking about, we have done some experiments that show that heavy trapping and then good slotlet regulations for like smallmouth bass, letting them grow large, can actually bring those populations down over time.
Well, let's hope you make some progress, you know, because it's a serious problem, as are all invasives. You've also got a Lake Leaders Program, Amy, and we're running kind of short on time, but I really want you to get into that and tell us what that's all about before we hit our next segment.
Sure, and Carol will chime in because Carol's been part of this since the beginning. So Lake Leaders is basically folks who love lakes and they want to do more. So we have this ability to help them with their leadership skills. And we meet, it's a very intensive program, and we expect a lot out of the people who come in, but I think they really get their money's worth. And they come in three different times and meet for a couple days at a time and basically go over everything from lake science to leadership skills to how to talk to a politician.
So you get like 25 to 30 people all together, right?
Right.
And what you told me is that they meet in Green Lake in the spring, and then they go to Tomahawk. Is it Lake Catherine up there? Or,
no, it's Lake Tomahawk.
Lake Tomahawk.
Lake Tomahawk in the summer, and they go out on a pontoon boat.
Yeah, we take them and go out and they're citizen scientists for a day, learn how to monitor the lakes.
And then they end up graduating at Aldo Leopold's shack in Baraboo.
Right? Yes.
How do you pick the people who end up in the Lake Leaders Program, or do they pick you?
Well, they can pick us, or if they have someone who nominates them. So basically, if someone has been through the program or has heard of the program and said, oh, this person would be great, they would do a great job, they're, you know, they need a little bit of leadership help, but they would be a great person to be a conduit, basically, between kind of what we want to happen across the state and their lake group.
How do people who are listening right now find out more about Lake Leaders or about the overall role UW Extension plays in lake conservation? You've also got a newsletter.
Yes, we have a newsletter. You can sign up for that. You can just go on our website. Just Google UWEX Lakes, and you'll get there. But we have a newsletter called Lake Tides. It's been running for almost 40 years. And so you can look at all the past information. If you have a lake group, you can use any of our articles that you want to use for your lakes. Some of them are timeless.
Amy Kowalski, I know you're busy. You've got a lot that you're doing with the convention this weekend. Thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you, Glenn.
And Carol, you're going to stick around for a little bit.
Sure.
And when we come back, we're going to hear from Mary Nipper of the Wisconsin Lakes organization, a nonprofit organization. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We are broadcasting live from UW Stevens Point for the 2014 Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention. We'll be right back after this short break.
Bet you're going fishing all of the time. Baby going fishing too. Bet your life, your sweet wife, catch more fish than you. Many fish bites if you got good bait. Here's a little tip that I would like to relate. Many fish bites if you got good bait. I'm a going fishing, yes, I'm going fishing, and my baby going fishing too.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs. Businesses like D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics, Access Prosthetics, and Gimme Shelter play a huge role in the success of WPR. Your business can too. More information at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Wausau's Woodson Art Museum, presenting exhibitions featuring upcycled couture fashion and fiber arts on view through June 15th. Details about how to repurpose and reimagine everyday items at lywam.org.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. We are back on Route 51 in a live broadcast from the UW Stevens Point campus for this year's Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention. I think that's the first time I've ever played the cow sills on the air. The convention takes place not on campus here, but at the Holiday Inn in Stevens Point. And it is open to the public. Drop in tomorrow, Friday, or Saturday. There are events going on today as well. And if you'd like to join the conversation here on the radio, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. Maybe you're concerned about the future of our lakes. Maybe you want to know how you can get involved. We'd love to hear from you, or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it on the air. I want to thank Amy Kowalski of UW Extension, who was with us for the first part of the program. Carol Schall of the DNR is back with us now, along with Mary Nipper, board president of the nonprofit organization Wisconsin Lakes. Mary, how long have you been attending this convention? Back in Stevens Point, it was in Green Bay for the last 11 years. And what do you get out of these conventions?
For me, it has been an experience of growth because I get to learn more each year. But I think originally I thought of it more as an opportunity to network with people that had the information I wanted to know, hear the latest science, bring it back to my local area. And that got me started and addicted, I might say. And it's good because I started out that last year at the Point, so it's good to be back to the Point.
So you've been doing this for 12 years now.
I have, and I plan to do it a little bit longer, too.
Well, tell us about the organization Wisconsin Lakes. A lot of people probably haven't heard about you.
Well, I heard your discussion discussing the three-legged stool. And this is the nonprofit portion, which is very much connected to the citizen component of protecting lakes. We have that membership opportunity. We do communication, but we do some training and some policy education with our grassroots folks. And so that's an opportunity to connect both statewide, but both also on the regional and local level.
You're a 501c3 nonprofit?
Tax-exempt organization, yes.
And that means you can work on policy issues, which UW Extension and the Wisconsin DNR, the other two parts of that three-legged stool, they can't do it, but you can.
We can, and we do it on behalf of our membership, but we also train our membership to become a stronger individual voice and collective voice.
What kind of policy issues have you been involved with?
I think one that really stands out how grassroots made a difference was about 5 years ago when we were continuing to worry about phosphorus runoff into our lakes. We looked at the contribution from lawn fertilizers that contain phosphorus and recognized that that's a good way to engage our public but also take care of the water quality. And throughout the state, we got a huge response of voice and changed legislation to ban phosphorus and lawn fertilizers. And that was because it was a statewide, citizen-based advocacy.
That happened 5 years ago?
About 5 years ago.
And, Carol, that must have helped with some lakes, you know, some lakes mm-hmm. that are heavily developed with lots of lawns around them, and you've got homeowners who want those nice, clean lawns, and they don't realize that they're destroying their own backyard, the lake, in the process.
Right, and lakes like around Madison where you have large, mm-hmm. large populations.
And those lakes are in trouble right now. From what I've read at the Capital Times and the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, they produced a series called Murky Waters on the problems facing our lakes, and they're looking at algae and bacteria threats, which have actually closed a lot of beaches in the Madison area. They call them the Yahara Lakes, but you probably know them as Lake Mendota, Lake Kiganza, Lake Wingra, Lake Wabisa. I'm missing one here. There's a fifth one.
Yeah. I wasn't counting with you.
Mm-hmm.
But how serious is that threat? You know, the threat of if you're closing beaches, that's not a good thing.
Well, I think Dr. Carpenter also said in that article that those lakes have kind of been that way for 30 years. We're not getting any better, but they're not really getting a lot worse. And some years are bad, some years are real bad. But it's serious. I think more people are attuned and worried about the blue-green algae and the those kinds of things and the bacteria. So,
are you hoping that with this lawn fertilizer phosphorus ban that maybe, you know, it's been 5 years, maybe it'll just take some time and things will gradually get better?
Well, and that's not going to do it in itself. We do what we're calling a total maximum daily load. It's a study of the watershed to try and find out where those sources of phosphorus are and really try and work with those sources and get them under control. And it's going to take some time, certainly.
Now, phosphorus was banned in lawn fertilizer 5 years ago, but Governor Walker has signed legislation giving municipalities more time to meet phosphorus standards. Mary, I'm going to ask you the question since you're the policy person here. Are you concerned that that's a step backward? Do you think we should be giving these communities more time to meet the phosphorus standards?
I think it's always a challenge to meet the those types of challenges because there's economic considerations. There is a great deal more to that. It's a very complex issue. While we applaud the approach, I think there's ways in which we could probably tighten that process up, and we will continue to look for those better solutions or additional solutions to add to that effort.
And some communities that have a real phosphorus problem in their mm-hmm. wastewater, they're looking at a significant amount
yes.
of money to clean that
yes.
up.
Yeah. And when you're dealing with, and that's, again, bringing it back to the local level, you're talking about educating and working with local officials and working with those communities to understand both aspects of why they need to control it, but also how to best balance that with the economics of that.
And if you've been listening and you're wondering how to get in touch with some of these organizations that you've been hearing about, go to the Route 51 Facebook page. We have the Wisconsin Lakes Link, the nonprofit that Mary is a member of, and also the Lake Leaders link, which will take you to the UW Extension webpage and let you know exactly how you can get involved as a citizen to help protect our lakes in Wisconsin.
Mary, I think, got into this by being Lake Leaders First. That's when I first met you. So,
yes, actually, and I heard Amy talking about it also. And what happens is many of us started out strictly thinking that my lake was the only concern they had. And particularly
that
after
what
going
was the only concern?
My lake, not the
oh,
lakes.
My lake,
we,
I got
yeah,
it.
We had a attitude, my lake. And when I went to Lake Leaders, I soon learned it's our lakes. And it was a big change in my thinking, but also recognizing that it looks like we've got to work statewide to get the job done.
Now, you've got about 400 members in Wisconsin Lakes, but you were telling me that a lot of these are associations, so that means mm-hmm. more people than just 400.
Yes, we have lake management districts, which, again, is a governmental group, but does have quite a large constituency. We also have the associations. And then we have individuals who may or may not belong to an association or district and also may not even own property. They just like lakes. They recreate. They understand the economic benefit that lakes bring to their local communities and statewide.
How do people change when they get involved with your organization? How do they begin to see things differently?
I think they feel empowered. Many people have thought my voice doesn't count, but when you begin to feel confident about using your voice through workshops, training, feeling like you're part of a group, I think it empowers them to go even further in expressing how they want to protect their lakes.
Carol, you're talking about the state grant program mm-hmm. at the convention, and this may help some people who are involved in Wisconsin Lakes are just ordinary people who want to get involved and need some funding to do it. Tell us about that.
Well, again, what the funding goes to is lake associations, lake districts, local governments. It's a cost-share program. We provide 75% of the money. They have to put up a match. And there's a whole array of things that they can do with those grants. One is to just do some education and outreach, develop a management plan for the lake, develop a watershed plan, and then we also have grants available to implement it, whether they want to put pollution control practices in the watershed. We also have a grant program for AIS, aquatic invasive species, to fund clean boats, clean waters programs or develop control plans for Eurasian water milfoil.
And anybody can apply for these grants?
Well, they has to be a qualified sponsor. Again, it has to be a qualified lake association, lake district, or unilocal government.
How do you decide who gets the money?
Well, it's a competitive grant program. They make an application, and we sit down and we have what criteria that we use to score the grants, and we go down, basically rank the projects, and when we run out of money, we run out of money.
Isn't that the truth, huh? It's something we can all relate to. How big, Mary, is a problem of overdevelopment on our lake shores? You know, you've got a lot of lake associations and mm-hmm. people who love their lakes. Riparians is the word you used, right?
Right, right.
Define that for me.
And riparians are people who own property directly with access to the lake. And with that, there is a very strong opportunity to have greater access to the lake. But some feel that with that access comes some responsibility for using the land in a lake smart way. And we do encourage it. But some of the overdevelopment issues come from lots of another term I'll throw out is impervious surfaces, which are surfaces that are on that property that may not allow water to absorb, go in, but it runs toward the lake. Roofs, sidewalks, driveways, hard surfaces are called impervious surfaces.
If you have
surfaces,
like a cement dock or something leading up to a...
We won't let you have that, but that could happen.
I mean, you read letters to the editor, right, and you read people who, yeah, frankly, Carol, don't like the DNR very much, mm-hmm, and they will say, this is my property, darn it. I'm going to do with it what I want to. Don't tell me what I can build, right, what I can't build. It's mm-hmm. mine.
And this is what we often are faced with, is to have those discussions about property rights and the health of the lake and the investment being made by them. And I think that's a big term we use, is they're invested very directly with that property rights in protecting the lake.
And you've got wooded areas that are being mm-hmm. turned into lots now, small mm-hmm. cabins, which yeah. used, you know, that's the image Absolutely. We've all got of Wisconsin lakes. Mm-hmm. They're being demolished and replaced with these huge mansions that take up the entire lot and also, I'm sure, cause more pollution problems, Carol.
Well, it's a constant challenge. There are ways, though, to mitigate that, if you mm-hmm. will, or minimize the impacts, and we try and work with our county zoning departments and our county land conservationists to, as the development occurs, that we manage the runoff before it goes to the lake.
How do you convince agricultural interests and farmers miles from lakes and flowages that their practices may be causing problems?
I think one of the things that we see now, and I think Carol's touched on it earlier about watershed. And when you move back from the lakefront into the watershed, you look at who is using what. What are the land uses of that watershed? And agriculture is a very big use. And we have to acknowledge that, that's a very important use for communities. So what we do is, I think the important thing is to bring them into the planning. How will you protect that lake? What is their stakeholder role? And actually, my experience is they get it.
How do you do that as a nonprofit? You obviously don't have any authority. You can't say, you know, you can't compel them to attend meetings.
No, you can't. But when you bring them to the table as one of a group of stakeholders, everyone has a role. I think being invited to the table means a lot. They usually come. And I think that's your opportunity to educate them and understand what their limits are, what their concerns are, and try to find a way to fit that into the bigger picture of how you're going to protect that water quality.
How big of a problem are CAFOs, huge dairy farms with thousands of cows producing tons of manure? We don't have a lot of small farmers in this state anymore.
Well, one thing that is good about them is all the waste is concentrated in one area where it can perhaps be managed better. Now, we do have spills and things like that mm-hmm. that can have cause problems, but it's just another one of the challenges. Animal waste is a problem, but so are the miles and miles of open cornfields.
And high-capacity wells got to be a problem in areas like the Golden Sands where we've had lakes and trout streams drying up.
And I think it goes back to the fact that to bring these people together to have these discussions instead of having them separately is bring them in and see if there aren't ways in which we could work better together. I think the whole way of protecting lakes is more collaborations and partnerships.
Are we developing a partnership between big agriculture, small farmers, businesses, lake users, and my favorite word again, riparians? Are you succeeding in doing that? Is your organization actually achieving what you want it to achieve?
I believe that we are because we are seeing some of the legislative initiatives that have come forward have been modified and changed because we're able to bring more people to the table, educate them, and maybe get some of these initiatives to be a little less damaging to the natural resources. And that means everybody gets a voice in that.
What can the average person do?
I'd say is pay attention to what we're doing, go on to our websites, and invite us to your local communities to talk with you, to give you workshops, to help you become a stronger voice for your lakes.
And again, we do have the Wisconsin Lakes link on our Route 51 Facebook page. What's the website for people who want to access it?
WisconsinLakes.org.
Mary Nipper, thanks so much for being with us. And Carol, once again, you're going to stick around.
Sure.
Carol Schall of the DNR. Mary Nipper of Wisconsin Lakes. They're here for the 2014 Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention going on at the Holiday Inn in Stevens Point. We're broadcasting live from UW Stevens Point. And when we come back, we're going to look at why business people are involved in this convention. We're going to talk to a fascinating woman, Jane Doffenbach, who's the president of Aquarius Systems. This is a company that is building lake management equipment right here in Wisconsin. You've probably never heard of them before, but you will next when Route 51 Regional Talk Radio continues.
This summer I did swan dives and jackknives with you all. But once when you weren't looking, I did a cannonball. Did a cannonball. This summer I went swimming. This summer I might have drowned. But I held my breath and I kicked my feet and I moved my arms around. Moved my arms around.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Stevens Point Area Co-op, Peninsula Music Festival, and Import Auto Clinic. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from the Wisconsin Lakes Partnership, bringing their 36th annual statewide convention back to Stevens Point April 24th through 26th, with hands-on workshops, national experts, and ideas for protecting our legacy of lakes. More at WisconsinLakes.org.
I'm Glenn Mulberg. You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We are broadcasting live from the UW Stevens Point campus to talk about this year's Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention. It's taking place starting today, running through Saturday at the Holiday Inn in Stevens Point. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on our Route 51 Facebook page. I'll read it on the air. And if you go to that Facebook page, you will find all kinds of cool links there to the various organizations that we have been talking about all day today. And we're going to talk about another one here. We want to thank Mary Nipper of Wisconsin Lakes and Amy Kowalski of UW Extension for joining us earlier. Welcome now Jane Doffenbach, the president of Aquarius Systems of Wisconsin, one of the business leaders participating in this year's convention. And Jane, your company is a leader in the manufacture of floating lake management technology. Tell me about that.
Our company has been manufacturing for 50 years now this year. Surface water management equipment, and that includes aquatic plant harvesters that go into the lakes and cut and remove the aquatic vegetation, the excess aquatic vegetation. We have a floating excavator. We have a floating bulldozer that we call the Swamp Devil. That's a shredding machine that's used for restoration purposes. And we also manufacture marine trash skimmers that go in ports and harbors and rivers to take marine debris out of the water.
And all of that stuff is made in Wisconsin?
Yep.
Nobody's heard of you.
I know.
Unless you're involved in maintaining water quality for some reason.
Well, yes, exactly.
And where are you located?
We're located in North Prairie, Wisconsin, which is about 90 miles north of Chicago and 40 miles west of Milwaukee and 60 miles east of Madison.
Okay. And you've got a 30,000 square foot factory I saw on your website.
Yep. And we have another shop next door as well, that where we originated from. We actually bring in the raw metal and we send out a finished machine.
Now, your website says you're the oldest and most experienced manufacturer of surface water management equipment in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You've been around for a long time, and obviously there is a continuing need for your products because you're still here.
Yes, people accuse us of planting weed seeds in the lakes, but the nature does find enough job on her own and with our human activities as well. And we've been selling the equipment is almost like a floating tractor. You know, it can last 20 years if you take good care of it. So we sort of saturated the market in the States. We have hundreds of these machines working on Wisconsin lakes, and now that you've heard about it, you'll probably spot one and see, and you'll know what it's doing.
All right, tell us what they look like, because people have probably seen them and not known what the heck they were looking at.
Well, it's a big barge. It has three conveyors on it, a front conveyor that has a cutter head, a storage conveyor that's on board, and a discharge conveyor that is extended off of the stern. And the cutter head goes down into the water about 5-6 feet deep and gives the weeds a haircut, and they're conveyed on board as it's cutting. So it's like a bagger mower underwater.
So you're not only cutting the weeds, but you're
removing them,
putting them on the boat.
Yes.
What do you do with them then?
And once the boat is full, it goes to shore, discharges off the stern into a shore-based conveyor, usually goes up into a dump truck, and it's hauled away to a landfill. We don't do landfill in Wisconsin. We usually go to an organic farmer or a regular farmer or to a compost site.
So they can use these weeds that you've taken out of the lakes and use them in order to fertilize the crops.
They do, and the weeds, it's about 95% water, so they do tend to dry out fairly quickly if they're turned regularly. What's left behind, our DNR has analyzed and compares to cow manure as far as nitrogen and phosphorus values.
Can you actually make money selling the weeds that you cut out of lakes?
Everybody that we sell a weed harvester to says we're going to bag and sell this stuff and get, you know, pay for our operations. And I usually tell them if they find someone kind enough to let them unload tons and tons of weeds every day, they're doing really well. So,
Carol Schall, what do you think of this company?
Well, it's great. It's one of the alternatives for dealing with too much vegetation in a lake. Chemicals aren't always what people want to use. Chemicals over time may not be the best thing for the lake year after year, and this is a good alternative.
And we understand that at one time they were actually putting arsenic in lakes in order to take care of the weed population.
Yeah, back in the 60s, sodium arsenate was really a chemical they were using, and it was very devastating, killed all the plants. We don't use that or allow that anymore.
And if you'd like to find out more about Aquarius Systems, we have yet another link on our Route 51 Facebook page.
Great.
So
thank you.
You may get some business out of this, Jane.
Great.
I don't know.
Awesome.
Well, let's go back to the 60s when they're dumping arsenic in the lakes. Mm-hmm. That was when your dad, John, and his brother, Doug. Doug,
yes.
The two of them started this company, visionaries, way ahead of their time.
Well, in fact, they didn't come up with the idea of weed harvesting. There was a fellow named Matt Grinwald from Heartland, Wisconsin, who really was the pioneer of the harvester business. And my father was building his machines in the 50s when he was vice president of a company in Wales, Wisconsin. And when they opened our firm in 1964, we continued to build for Matt. But Matt was ahead of his time. And couldn't make it.
So this is all Wisconsin made. Why is this business located in Wisconsin instead of Florida, where I'm sure they've got a lot of weeds too?
And that story starts around the early 1900s with a company called Hockney, which is still in business today in Delavan, Wisconsin.
But we're going back 100 years now to the turn of the last century.
Yep. Well, if you think about it, I heard Carol say we have around 10,000 lakes. I would say we count every puddle, so we have 15,000 lakes in Wisconsin. And we've had dairy farming and other agriculture here for many years. There's been pressures on these lakes for 100 years or more. Those nitrogen and phosphorus goes in and feeds the aquatic plants as well as anything else. And
why would this guy back in the 1900s be concerned about that?
Well, in southeastern Wisconsin, we harvested a lot of ice for ice boxes.
That was before refrigerators and freezers.
Correct.
And that was what, for Chicago, I guess?
Yeah, for Milwaukee and Chicago markets, certainly. The fussy Chicago housewives did not like that icebox melting and leaving weeds behind in her icebox. So,
yeah, I think most housewives wouldn't like weeds in their ice.
Right. And so Chester Hockney invented a little cutter boat to go in autumn to knock the weeds down so that they could harvest clean ice. And that was the start of our industry.
And that also started right here in Wisconsin.
Yes, along with Harley-Davidson and snowmobiles and all kinds of outboard engines.
Isn't it ironic that we have some lakes with too many weeds and others infested with rusty crayfish, Carol Schall, that don't have any weeds at all?
Right, and some lakes naturally don't have a lot of nutrients and they don't have a lot of plants. It's all lakes aren't created equal.
Do you think average people would benefit from attending this convention? We've been talking to people who have vested interests, UW Extension, the Department of Natural Resources, the head of Wisconsin Lakes, Jane Doffenbach, a businesswoman like you. What's in it for the average guy?
Well, I think if they like natural resources in general, we always have a variety of talks that are more along the lines of frogs and the natural biota of lakes. It's not all science and gloom and doom. There's a lot of interesting things that are at the convention as well.
So we've got Tyrone Hayes. Mm-hmm. We've got this panel that I'm moderating tomorrow on the acid rain experiment. Mm-hmm. And I understand Robin Voss, the speaker, the assembly speaker, is also going to be speaking at the convention.
He'll be our luncheon speaker Friday.
On Friday. Mm-hmm. That's tomorrow. And it's open to the public.
Correct.
Jane, as a businesswoman, what do you get out of it?
Well, for us, it's such a tiny, niche market. As you said, you've not heard of such a business, and you wouldn't even realize you have such a need. So this is a wonderful opportunity for us to meet people on lakes who have needs and have weeds. You know, I mean, how else are we going to find them? I wanted to mention quickly, though, you were talking about all the wonderful things in Wisconsin, and other states have emulated our program here. We have the very best in the country, and other states, they wish to be as good as we are here.
And you can check it out at the Holiday Inn in Stevens Point today, tomorrow, and Saturday. Jane, your website?
It's Aquarius-Systems.com.
And you can find a link to that on our Route 51 Facebook page. Thank you so much for being with us today. We want to thank today's guest, Carol Schall, the Section Chief for Lakes and Rivers of the Bureau of Water Quality of the DNR. Also, Jane Doffenbach, the President of Aquarius Systems of Wisconsin. Mary Nipper, Board President of Wisconsin Lakes. And who am I missing here? Amy Kowalski, UW Extension Lakes Communications Specialist. The 2014 Lakes Partnership Convention continuing tomorrow and Saturday at the Holiday Inn. And again, I'll be moderating that panel discussion tomorrow morning with the scientists who conducted a 30-year experiment on the effects of acid rain on our lakes. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer and technical director, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Crystal Waters. Special thanks to Eric Olson, Nick Schultz, Jane Ritger, Ginger Alden, John Gose, and Kevin Trueblood. Thanks also to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme, and our special music today by Taj Mahal, The Cow Sills, Loudon Wainwright III, and Christopher Cross. Next week on Route 51, we look at the changing role of higher education in Wisconsin and the integration of our UW schools with the greater communities they serve, a program dedicated to the memory of the late Jim Veninga, former dean at UW-Marathon County. Remember to follow us on Facebook. If you missed some of this broadcast, we will rebroadcast it in its entirety Friday evening at 7 on 90.9 FM. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.